Ennis is going to come in studio today. We've got James Myrtle in about 10 minutes. I hope James didn't have to wake up. I hope he wasn't watching West Coast hockey last night. Ennis, who's probably listening to this right now in the parking lot, like an absolute dork.
He's below us right now.
Yeah, he asked. He always is.
Okay, that's not what I meant.
No,
that's not what I meant.
He's even below you guys. You don't have to actually move when he comes in here.
I'm going to be chairless in an hour.
No, he can just stand.
You're going to make him stand.
He needs it. He's got to move around. But yeah, he asked me to come in at 10. He went, I let him not do 9. Coming in studio. He's here. He's in the parking lot. Good job, Benny.
9 a.m.
Yeah, way to go. Way to go, parking lot boy. Drunken game for the Leafs last night.
Bizarre.
Really fun Leafs talk that came back with Sam and I. We went, I want to say 40 minutes, which is pretty long for Leafs talk because there was just so many things to go over. And then I realized even at the end of it, I didn't even really bring up the Matthews milestone stuff.
Yeah.
Pete was freaking out, but that's because Pete's out of his mind. Like, he's just, him and Elliot Friedman, I don't understand. Matthews goes, yeah, it means a lot in original six franchise. And you and Elliot are like, that
he's
means
staying,
he's coming back. He gets it. He knows that they're the Maple Leafs. I went, okay, yeah.
Well, it was, I jumped to, he's coming back. But I think Elliot was more saying just, he really understands what it means to be a Leaf. Yeah. And I thought it was a nice moment. Yeah.
But I feel like he just said like what he was supposed to say.
Yeah.
I hope he stays too. But I wasn't.
Do you know why I think Matthews is going to stay?
Why do you think that?
Because it's a major market. The Leafs are good and they'll offer him as much money as he wants.
Yeah. See, that makes more sense over the interview.
Yeah. No, I kind of get the hand wringing about the Matthews stuff where people go, oh, well, he could leave. I don't think he was ever going to go to Arizona. I've been on record about this a billion times. The guy likes being on the cover of GQ. He likes showing up at NBA courtside games. He sees Russell Westbrook and goes, I like what's going on with you. He's a flashy American goal scorer.
Yeah.
He's not playing at Mullet Arena.
No.
And it doesn't matter if they get Connor Bedard. The only two ever that I thought were maybe considerations for him would be the LA Kings or the Rangers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I still don't see either of those teams. I just don't. I don't see him going to the Rangers. I don't see them making room for him. Of course, you always make room for a guy like Matthews, but the Kings thing even, you really want to be on the West Coast and, I guess like maybe lifestyle-wise, you'd like to do.
Matthews in LA. Like,
but the thing is that those guys go there all offseason anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Matthews is living in Arizona. Maybe he wants an easier life, but to me, you just do that later. You sign another short deal with the Leafs. You try to capitalize on the years of the prime. Mm-hmm. You hope to win a Stanley Cup and cement your legacy as the greatest American-born player ever. You don't do that as easily on the LA Kings.
Mm-hmm.
This is people think that I'm doing shtick about this whole markets that matter thing. I'm sorry, but the older I get, the more I look at this stuff and go, no, some of these cups matter more.
Yeah.
They just do. You win with franchises that matter, that resonate, and you remember them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you have to bring it up. It has to be an iconic team in a bad market.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
The only other team that I'd be scared of is the Rangers.
I don't think he goes.
Yeah.
What I do think is kind of fascinating about him and Marner is that how quickly they've just jumped up the franchise all-time
that's true.
Point scorers list. It's a byproduct of a couple things. But, like, their brilliance as players. But also, how just terrible this organization has been at keeping greats or ever having them. It's kind of laughable because every time. So, I've been obviously in the podcast radio game for a little while now. And I started as a producer. And every once in a while, you sit down, right? Leafs get in the playoffs. And you go, all right, who are the Leafs greats that we would like to get on the shows? And then you go down the list and you go, and the list is 5 minutes long. There's a lot of great players who have played here, but there's not a lot of great players who have spent careers here, right?
Agreed.
And so these guys have an opportunity to just obliterate every single Leafs point record, including Matt Sundin's. And then, maybe make this thing look a little bit more respectable. It is funny for me, I know you guys watched them too as little kids, but I was in my university years, watching the Phil Kessel teams.
Mm.
And I just, when you look at the list and go, these guys have way more points than Phil. That doesn't compute to me. It felt way longer.
Yeah.
It just, some of it doesn't add up. Some of it doesn't make sense.
But. And then they also showed the Leafs' last home win versus the Blues last night on the broadcast.
Yeah.
And JVR's there with his green mouth guard and like they've got the maple leaf on the shoulder and everything. And then Morgan Riley's there and it's like, oh wow, Morgan Riley has been here for a long time as well, you know? Like,
yeah. No, that's it. Like this organization has had Austin Matthews is already 12th and Marner's 13th all time scoring.
And they're both top five in points per game for the team.
Well, yeah.
Matthews is second.
That for sure.
Yeah.
That points per game though is
I'm just illustrate in the franchise history they're both top five.
No, but yeah, this year they're likely going to finish both in the top 10. They're both going to pass five.
Yeah,
like 100%.
Early next year they're passing Ted Kennedy at number
9. Yeah, and there's no
easily.
Yeah, I would say that it's with 2 years from now they'll both be top 5. They'll both be top 6.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
For a 100-year-old plus franchise.
Yeah. No, it's truly insane. I was actually, you know what isn't, I got some interesting stats for you guys today. Okay.
Stats of JD.
No, just like little things that, I've got Myrtle in a couple minutes and I do want to bring some things up, but I was looking at this today. According to Natural Stat Trick, Austin Matthews still has more even strength, more 5-on-5 points than Connor McDavid.
5-on-5 points to Connor McDavid career this season.
This season. Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's shocking, right?
Yeah. I would not have guessed that.
No, neither would I.
I would not have guessed that.
I never would have guessed that. Guess where Matthews is in even strength scoring this season?
Entire league. If he's above McDavid,
top 3?
Yeah.
Top 3?
He's third. Yeah. He's behind only Tage Thompson and Erik Karlsson. Erik Karlsson, again, you guys, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, you guys want to, you weirdos that for some reason are in my mentions today. About my Connor Bedard take of he can't end up in San Jose, where they're going, San Jose has had a lot of good teams and they would usually fill the shark tank. Erik Karlsson is having an out of this world season.
Yeah.
And guess who has seen it? No one. He's just doing it.
We watch it more than
he is doing it in complete anonymity. Nobody's seen it. It's happened two nights when he's played the Leafs and whenever he's played the Habs. Mm-hmm. Those are when people have seen those games. No one has any idea. Like, he has 35 even strength points this season.
Wow.
Unreal.
That's insane.
In 39 games. No, he's out of this world. And people are afraid to take on that contract. I get it. But if you're a serious team, you got to be thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? You know that I kicked around that thing of, is there a way that you could get Karlsson and Timo Meier to the Leafs?
Mm.
And I think, again, I still believe it. If they would consider something where Morgan Riley goes the other way, I would at least entertain it. I would at least consider it. It's a bold ass move. I know it's bold ass move.
Just got engaged too. Yeah, that's
okay, I don't care. Honest to God, please, I'll kill you.
I knew that was going to come up at some point
two
today.
Canadian sporting legends.
Okay, yeah.
But I knew that was going to come up today at some point.
Pete, what? Did he get engaged yesterday?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well. Over the holiday break.
That's nice. Good for him.
But then you sent it, and I'm like, that's coming up tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. That's
keep it up, Pete.
Honestly, this is like all Pete's good for.
There's the Pronger drop.
Okay, so another interesting stat. William Nylander is tied, as of today, for 13th in even strength scoring. He is first on the Leafs in scoring overall. Where do you think he is league-wide for scoring overall?
Scoring
you guys
overall?
Know?
Top 15?
For
goal scoring
Matthews
is top 10.
Matthews now top 15 too.
Goal scoring is top 10, I know that.
Goal scoring?
It's weird. Yeah. So it's very strange because Marner had the point streak, but he's 20th in scoring. He's got and again, these guys are all separated by a point.
Yeah.
Like Marner's sitting there at 43, Matthews is sitting there at 44, and then William Nylander is there at 45.
Yeah.
But Nylander is 12th.
Yeah.
In the NHL in scoring. And if you look at, I was going through this yesterday, and I was really thinking about it. So he's 12th in points so far this season. He's having a brilliant year. I thought he was the Leafs' best player last night.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a thought exercise, and I am going to ask Myrtle in a minute, of if you just drafted everyone in the NHL, right? There was a draft tomorrow.
And you took draft.
Out. Yeah, you took out Connor Bedard. You weren't allowed to use the draft. It's guys that are in the NHL right now today. Where would Nylander go?
Pete and I were having this conversation.
We were talking about this morning,
You guys watch Leafs Talk, that's why?
We were having this conversation. We also read the doc.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you have the doc. You were inspired by, yes, my... Okay.
And we weren't doing, like, number tiers this morning. We were doing, like, tier lists.
We
like
excluded
tier A, tier
goalies.
Mm-hmm. And we excluded goalies.
And we said, without a doubt, top 50 in the
league. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
forwards and defensemen.
I think realistically, like, if you're doing, like, first rounds, like, I think realistically in the first round, because that'd be top 32. And I think Nylander going in the first round, like, late first round would be realistic, early second.
Yeah, there's just so many talented players in the NHL, right?
There are, but I was just looking at, a lot of forwards, and that's the thing I was thinking of today, is if you're looking at this list of 5-on-5 scorers, and you're looking at, okay, this is crazy stuff, but I really do feel this way, okay? If you were drafting right now, you would take Nylander over Ovechkin. There's no question. He's better than Ovechkin is today. Well, he is. He's better than Ovechkin. Yeah. And so, like, you got to remember, if you were drafting him, you're taking him in a way higher spot because of his age. But now he's just putting it all together. Anyway, I want to bring in Myrtle on this. Senior editor at The Athletic. Good morning, James. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, pal. Happy New Year. So, a ton of stuff to get to today. But I was, you know, I'm looking at numbers yesterday. I'm trying to just put together some stuff with the Leafs and take a peek at things. And yeah, Nylander, everybody knows now that he's leading the Leafs in points, but now he's top 12 in the NHL. He's only a couple of points from being, or he's actually only 1 point away from being in the top 10. He's been brilliant, consistent for the vast majority of the year. He's 27 years old. He's kind of hitting his prime. If you thought, or if the NHL had a draft tomorrow, all the players in the NHL, where do you think he slots in around, roughly?
So this is like all 32 GMs are,
all 32
are
GMs,
doing the drafting?
All 32 GMs are doing the drafting. They decide to slot in. I was thinking about just making this, hey, who are the best players right now? Because maybe that's the more pertinent conversation. But either one of them I think is interesting. Either he is among, the best players you're trying to win right now. Because he's also had playoff performances, right? Like, this isn't a guy who's wilted on those stages. Or just even overall... But then you got to pay him a couple of years from now. So both are kind of, both really intrigued me. Where do you think he goes?
I mean, you might even have to pay him this summer, right? Like, with the way things are going, if you want to keep him.
Yeah.
The interesting thing with Nylander, I remember asking, where there was all the noise around him, you know, after the Montreal collapse, it was like, oh, they got to change something. They got to break up the core four. They got to do something. And you talk to other teams, other executives around the league about Nylander going back, I mean, that's not even a year and a half ago. And there's a lot of teams that were really down on William Nylander and that, you know, and his trade value around the league wasn't what it should have been, frankly, for how talented he is. And I wonder how much that perception has changed with other teams just watching what he's doing right now. I mean, you know, as people like, you know, fans listening and you and myself who've watched basically every game that he's played here, he's always had this in him. Like, there's never been a question that he couldn't do this. But there's been this perception around the league that he's one-dimensional or he's inconsistent or, you know, any of these things. So all that is to say, I think that if you did a draft around the league, that he would fall further than he probably should, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It's just funny because I was thinking about that same thing last night about how, boy, a lot of teams might be kicking themselves looking at him when he hits free agency, just thinking, we could have had this guy, maybe not for a song, but you have to believe that after that Leafs collapse, or even, I don't know, maybe not last offseason, it feels like they really, really, they took that Tampa loss and said, yeah, we love what we're doing here. But after the Montreal loss in particular, you got to figure that if certain teams would have gotten aggressive with trade packages, that Toronto would have at least listened.
Yeah, and I think it was just the opposite. Like, I don't know how far along any of it got, but my understanding was that his value was not that high. Like, they would have had to sell him for 75 cents on the dollar if they were going to move him then. So it just didn't make any sense.
Yeah. I'm looking at what he's doing right now. And again, I'm trying not to be too much of a prisoner of the moment, because that does happen a lot when you do what I do, which is go on the air every single day. But all that was sitting with me last night is it's pretty wild that on a team that has two of the league's best players in Matthews and Marner, and that's not even up for debate, right? Those are two guys that are bona fide top 10, 12 players in the NHL. Like, that's, I think, the lowest that you could probably put Marner.
Yeah.
That Nylander on any given night can look just as good, if not better than them. And I thought that was the case last night.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, and he's underrated around the league. He's still underrated around the league, and it's to the point, you know, where if you could go to the fan base and you could ask them right now, who's going to lead the team in goals, who's going to lead the team in points this season, mm-hmm. and you're going to get a number of people picking Nylander just with how well he's played this year. I mean, I think it's going to be a three-way race. I mean, when's the last time you could say that about this team? I mean, I can't think of – it's an embarrassment of riches just with the offensive firepower they've got right now, especially concentrated in those three guys. And that's even with, you know, we haven't talked about it a ton, but, you know, Tavares has really tailed off. I mean, he's down to half a point a game over at least a month now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's less concerning when you've got other guys that can really step up and just fill the net.
Yeah. Kipper and Bourne were talking about moving him to the wing for Holmberg the other day. Yes. Okay. This is
interesting.
I was like, this is getting a little out of control. Like I was laughing. I was texting with Sam yesterday, picturing a scenario where Sheldon Keefe and Dubas ask Tavares to come into the office and tell him that he'll be watching Pontus Holmberg lose faceoffs all night long as he plays the wing beside him. Yeah. I don't think that it's going to be that extreme, but yeah, the Tavares thing is a touch concerning at this point. Yeah, he had a couple nice opportunities last night, but one in particular where you went, oh, you'd just love to see him be able to get one of those, especially against the struggling Binnington. But yeah, the only weird thing with Nylander is, if I'm going to be honest and like painfully truthful, you're right about this when I'm saying, hey, where would he go in the league? If it was for this season, I think he'd be extremely high. He'd be 100% without a doubt. You'd have a hard time convincing me that he wouldn't be one of the most 32 valuable players. Like these guys were saying he'd go in the first round. If you were telling me it's the, hey, this is a futures draft as well, and I know that I have to consider that contract, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just me. Maybe this is a me problem, but I would have some reservations with him looking at a contract in the 10-ish plus million dollar range.
Yeah, I mean, the term you're going to have to commit to as well. I mean, if he does make it to free agency, it'd be super fascinating where that number lands. And, you know, just looking at what some other guys around the, you know, what Rantanen and Point and some other players have gotten. I mean, obviously Nylander's, you know, more a UFA than an RFA. So, and where the cap's going to be at that point, too. I mean, that's going to be a big X factor for him. But, yeah, I mean, if he ends up finishing top 10 in scoring this year and 40 goals, and then all of a sudden, you know, I've always been thinking of him kind of in the Philip Forsberg range, kind of around $8.5-$9 million a year in a long-term deal. But that could change if he has just a monster year this year, and he certainly looks capable of it.
That's it. And this kind of ties into the Bunting stuff, right? Is yesterday Pierre LeBrun tweets, quote, hearing that the Leafs this week have touched base with Michael Bunting's camp, a very, very preliminary chat about the pending UFA and next contract. Nothing concrete yet. Unclear where this goes at this point, end quote. So Bunting was awesome.
Bunting's been on fire, right?
Yeah, of course. And it was funny because that actually happened before last night's game where he draws a penalty, scores two goals, he gets an assist, and all you're thinking of is, boy, this guy's so perfect. And I outlined this dilemma a little bit with McKee last night on Leafs Talk. But you're in a tough spot because you have Nylander and you have Matthews who are coming up on new contracts, right? So the idea of, hey, make sure you get the right guys done in order, that was always criticized before, right? With Kyle Dubas was, hey, they did Nylander first and whatever. It's not even a relitigation thing. But the idea that you would do Bunting's contract without knowing what the future of those two guys is, without any certainty, is tough. But then if you let them walk in free agency, you have to make sure you find someone that fits the chemistry mold with the two of them. And in a what would be a must-win year, especially if they don't win this season, boy, you're in a very weird spot. So it's just the leverage game between these two sides to me is very fascinating because Bunting is a local kid. He's clearly in one of the best positions in the NHL, getting to play with a mix of Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. It doesn't get much better than that. People know his name. He gets to play his perfect role with those guys. And yet, he's doing this so well, and he hasn't made any money in his career, and he's an older player. He's got to be prioritizing it to some degree. How do you think this shakes out?
Well, it's been pretty clear, and I haven't talked to the camp, so I haven't been involved in kind of trying to figure out, but it's been pretty clear that they've wanted it out there that he's willing to do something long term to bring the cap hit down. So that's interesting. And at the beginning of the year, when that was kind of floating out there a little bit in some of the reports, it's like, oh, this guy's played one huge home run season. Of course he wants a 7 or 8 year deal right now. But I don't know. I wonder, you know, it seemed like there weren't really any talks happening. And now, you know, the Leafs show back up to the bargaining table when Bunting right now looks like he could easily duplicate the 63-point season that he had last year. And that's going to put you in a really tough position negotiating wise. And, you know, again, you look at the comparables for someone like Bunting, and there aren't very many for guys that have not played very many games and put up the number of points that he had. And at UFA, with the cap going where it's going to go, you know, you're probably looking at something with a 4 at the beginning of it. And I don't know. I'm with you, though. I mean, you find someone that's that good of a fit, the window that the Leafs have, someone that wants to stay. Mm-hmm. If you can find a way to get the AAV down to a number where you feel comfortable, you probably just, you know, you already let Hyman walk kind of over concerns with the term and everything. I think you kind of just bite the bullet and you worry about years, you know, whatever, 4, 5, 6, and 7 later.
That's it. You start getting into the years 6, 7 with guys like Bunting, who, okay, he's actually been pretty resilient. He gets knocked around pretty hard, though. And it's funny because teams take their turn on him. He's just the ragdoll for every other opponent. And then last night, it's his own guys, right? Kampf just gives him a bucket right to the face, and he just is in a really violent collision. I always wonder what the sustainability of, someone like that is in their later years. The other part of it is he's so far completely unproven as even a semi-line driver. Hyman was that. And of course, he's not going to get Hyman money, but you could put Hyman down on your third line and all of a sudden that was the Hyman line. We've seen little flashes of put Bunting down the lineup, and there's no such thing as a Bunting line. Like that's not going to be a thing, and you can tell why the Leafs have been reluctant to try it even more. The real question for them has to be if they can find that on the cheap again, if they really feel as though they can just find guys who fit in next to those two and it's basically foolproof, then I think that they've really got to squeeze them. The being a local guy thing, having the perfect scenario, getting to live, you know, at home and be a part of a Maple Leafs team that could win a Stanley Cup, this to me is actually an important negotiation for a guy like Kyle Dubas. If we've been critical of one thing of him, pretty much universally, it's been his contract negotiations, right? Unless it's picking up guys off the scrap heap, the major ones have not gone very well for Kyle. He's either lost people in free agency or he's, given up more than what the market was offering similar players at the exact same time, and especially with the RFA stuff. I actually think that the Bunting one is going to be a real judgment spot for him as a general manager if he's still the guy that even makes this deal, I guess, which I think he will be, on, how he has developed in that regard as a general manager.
Well, I mean, in his defense, I mean, they did let Hyman walk, and they did let Campbell walk, and, like, with these guys, when the number and the term went to a place they didn't want to go, they moved on. So, and some other teams wouldn't do that. You know, some other teams would be held hostage by, you know, Hyman situation and just been like, we can't lose this guy.
But they just genuinely could not do that from a cap standpoint. Like it wasn't even a realistic possibility without making some pretty serious, you know, cutting around the rest of the roster.
Yeah. I mean, I think they could have fit that in, but yeah, it would have hurt.
There was surgery that would have had to happen to keep Hyman.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, maybe you got to move a Muzzin out or something like that, right? Or I don't know. Like, there's probably like a world where they could have made it work. But yeah, it would have hurt. But then you look at Hyman, like the way he's playing, and it's like, wow. Like, it's just, he's been unbelievable in Edmonton.
Yeah. Edmonton sucks, though. They lost the game. It's just, it's funny because a certain, you know, I don't care. I like to play these games. A certain pretty prominent hockey writer took a shot at me pretty publicly last year when Edmonton lost, and I tweeted about it. I said, that blue line, I don't know. Like, that's really going to be tough. It's going to be tough to compete with that next year. Yeah. And that prominent writer happened to, you know, have something out there about their blue line maybe not showing up again last night. And I was like, oh, interesting. The old Toronto idiots never have a good opinion out here. They're little bozos from the East. Anyway, I think that they got to wait on him. They got to continue to wait. They can't do anything in season. And yeah, go into the offseason, you got to roll the dice. You've got to see who your general manager is first. You've got to see how the playoffs play out. You got to have a better temperature read on, just the star players in general and how they're feeling. You got to have a better read on how Tavares kind of ages down the stretch. There's just way too many questions for me. By the way, another story from last night. I was going to ask you about the deadline, but no, I'm going to ask this first. There's two other things from that game that I want to discuss with you. One is, do you think there's anything in the regular season that the third line can do to actually garner your trust come playoff time?
And produce some offense, you know, and they've been doing that a little bit more lately. And I didn't like the way they played last night. Like, I thought that they were, you know, the Matthews line crushed it in their minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I thought that Tavares line was okay. And they were getting some tough defensive assignments. They were putting them out there. But the bottom two lines, I mean, I didn't see a lot that I loved there. I mean, if you're going to go with Holmberg and Hunt and Aston Reese as, you know, a group, then you're going to need offense from the third line for sure. Otherwise, you've only got two lines that can produce offense. And, you know, I think the jury's still out whether that third line can produce anything. And, you know, maybe there's something coming at the deadline that's going to be kind of like a domino effect where you add something to the second line and then you can put a Yarncroc or someone on the third line. And then, you know, maybe that helps them. But that's what I would need to see from that third line is can they actually contribute meaningfully in the offensive zone more than they have over the course of this year so far?
My biggest, if I could be in the front office and if I could make one plea, it would be flip Engvall, put him in a deal and make sure that he is off your playoff roster. 17 playoff games, 0 goals.
Yeah, I think that could happen too.
Yeah.
I mean, like there's $2.25 million that you could throw in, and then all of a sudden, you know, then I think the Leafs could be looking at potentially adding two players instead of just one with
That's
the cap
hope.
Space that they've got. Yeah,
that's my hope, is that he continues to produce on this third line. That, because I actually think that Engvall is an overall fine player. It's just that there are some guys on certain teams that to me don't make sense. And with the Leafs going into the postseason this year, just trying to add one luxury piece, I don't think that that is good enough for them. I think that that bottom six needs a little bit more of an identity. And even last night you saw Dryden Hunt down there, and I know some people just think that this is caveman talk, but he's a guy that knows his role, and he's trying to throw a hit, and he's trying to make a spark. And last year that cost him with Kyle Clifford, you know, going too far with that stuff. But I would love to see them have a little bit more bite, have a few guys that are tougher to play down low. And yeah, maybe if those kind of players, those guys usually are way too expensive come deadline time. But I do think that maybe there is a swap there where another team would look at Engvall and say, hey, he's still relatively young. He's still cheap. He can produce points in the regular season. He can.
Well, maybe they want to try and sign him too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. I think that he is genuinely the definition of when guys talk about how there's two different, there's two different leagues. There's the regular season and the playoffs. But yeah, speaking to Chris Pronger last night, I couldn't shake him saying they haven't proven anything in the playoffs or none of this matters. You really got to focus on who they are in the playoffs. And to me, it's just, yeah, that is a part of it where I go, I don't think Engvall is a playoff type player on this Maple Leafs team. I'd flip him.
Well, that's been the criticism of Engvall, like even when he came over and was with the Marlies. And yep. I mean, that's something that Sheldon Keefe has been in his ear about basically ever since he got off the plane from Europe into North America. Is like, you know, we need to kind of change the kind of player you're going to be. I remember talking to Engvall in training camp, like his first full training camp with the Leafs. And he was trying to make the team. He was having a great training camp. And he was saying, I need to be a more physical player. I know I need to change my game. I know. And the criticism of him and the reason he slipped in the draft is that he was considered to be kind of like a Europe only player, just with being a perimeter type of player. And he's just never fully figured it out. You've seen glimpses of it where he'll go in the corner, but it's really not his personality. It's just it's not who he is. He's not a mean guy.
No.
You know? And some guys can be nice guys off the ice and play a really hard-nosed game on the ice, but it just seems like that's just not who he is.
No, he's 26 years old. I don't think that you can teach what he's missing. And I don't think that, I think the Leafs need what he is missing come playoff time. And yeah, it's funny because last night he scores that goal on a tip. And I went, yeah, that's you going to the tougher area of the ice. How many times have I seen a guy like Pierre Engvall, 6'5", long reach, score a tip-in goal? And I went, I don't remember one ever like that. I don't remember a single goal that he has scored that way. And I watch every single game. I have no recollection. And, you know, kind of I was thinking about who he sort of reminds me of. This is a little harsh, but we were joking about him this morning. And so that's why it's on the forefront. There's just a little bit of Freddie Gauthier there where you keep waiting for, he's obviously more skilled. He's obviously much faster, but a little bit of just, hey, just put your body, just finish a check. Stop flying by every single time. Stop poking the stick out and turning. Just hit someone. And you keep wanting it, and you keep waiting for it, and it's just, it's never going to happen. The piece of it, though, that you mentioned there that I think is really interesting is the Yarncroc thing. Because it ties into Tavares slowing down, right? Hey, Tavares looks like he's slowing down. You probably want to give a little bit of a bump there. The charts, the analytics on Yarncroc since he started the season down on the third line versus who he's been on the second line have been like drastic, right? Even all the nerds are freaking out about it. They're looking at it saying, this is unreal. We've never seen spikes like this with guys. I do attribute it a lot to the different players he's been with, obviously. He is an NHL caliber guy, but what do you like them to do there? Just in terms of it, him being better, does that give you more reason to believe, hey, maybe you just stick with this? Or does that embolden you to say, well, if he can do that, what could X do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's if you want to add more scoring to the lineup, I mean, wouldn't you want to add it on a third line? I mean, it feels like it makes... We'll see what they're going to be able to do. I mean, but I think in a perfect world, you're adding a top six player that can make a big impact, and you're not going to want to put that player with Kerfoot or whatever. You know, like you're going to want them to play with your best player. So, I think Yarncroc's a placeholder. I mean, I think I would want to see more of it before I get as excited as the quote unquote nerds are getting about.
Oh, yeah, they are. What, you know. I mean, you know. I've gotten some texts or you've seen some tweets. The nerds are
We did quarter season report cards where we graded all the players after the first 21 games or whatever it was, and I gave Yarncroc an F. And yeah. I've been hearing about it a lot.
Yeah, so. But he deserved the F. That's what I'm saying. He's gone from an F to, I would say, like a B minus.
Well, his nerd numbers in the first 20 games were, like, he was down 43%, 42%. Yeah. Like, it was really ugly. He was spending a lot of time in the D zone. He had 6 points the first 21 games.
No, he's
like
awful.
6 points.
Yeah, 4-year contract. So, it's like, boy, this might be one of the worst ones. This might end up being,
He looked way better. Yeah. He's looked way better. I mean, the last 20 games, he's looked like the $2.1 million player that they signed him to be, which is great, but... Yeah. Maybe he's the kind of guy that, you know, you play him with pluggers and he looks like a plugger and you play him with good players. And it's like, well, you can see him make a couple of passes. He's got a good shot. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that line's ready for prime time in terms of playing against, you know, a top team in the playoffs.
You know what though? I was thinking about this again with Bunting and with Yarncroc, and this has been something that I need to flesh out a little bit more and really need to focus on and kind of look back historically through, but I kind of feel like Sidney Crosby screwed us up a little with this whole, well, there's certain guys who can play with star players and you need to be able to covet those guys. And I just wonder for the Yarncrocs and the Buntings, and I think Bunting is obviously much better and he has shown a lot more value and that's why he's going to get paid almost double what Yarncroc does. But this whole, I wonder if it's a bit of a misnomer, the way that we talk about them, where we go, hey, if he plays with good players, he's good. And if he plays with bad players, he's bad. It's like, yeah, how many guys fit that bill? I would feel like a lot. And maybe there's only so, like, there's probably less Nick Ritchies who can't rise to that and more of the other two guys that we're talking about that actually can. Do you have Ilya Samsonov concerns yet?
A little bit. I mean, I think he's at like an 850 for the last four or five games. Mm-hmm. I think he took more heat for the game last night than he probably deserved. And Sheldon Keefe came out in defense of him. And, you know, Keefe basically said, I didn't like the first goal, you know, the shorthanded goal. But other than that, I thought that, he thought there was a lot of stuff that was, you know, coming from in tight or, you know, bang, bang plays or things like that. I mean, it's just Samsonov right from the beginning of the year. I mean, he's looked kind of scrambly and kind of a bit all over the place. And but guys like that sometimes can make the, like, look at the save. You go back, watch the save that he made in overtime.
That was
unbelievable. Yeah, it was I was on my couch and audibly it was, you know, like, wow. Like, you know, so he's got that in his arsenal. And I think that, you know, you got to be prepared for these guys. They weren't going to have a 930 all year. So there's going to be some of these games where they're going to need to win when he allows three or four and or five, as was the case last night. I have a little bit of concern, but also I think, you know, realistically, he was going to have some games like this. And what you want to see is that, you know, you have a tough one and you let in the goal, you battle back and you make some of the saves that he made in the third and in overtime and give your team a chance. And that's what he did.
Yeah. Overtime, that was really impressive. The third, I just, and this is just my eye, I think he made four saves and they were all from the perimeter. Like they were all, hey, here's a soft wrister. We just want to be able to have some stats here. We want to, St. Louis at the very end of the period just threw a couple on net and went, hey, try.
Well, that's part of it too. I mean, you look at the good teams around the league right now and they're protecting their goalies so well. I mean, you watch Carolina play or Boston play right now and it's like, you know, and there's a reason Linus Ullmark wasn't the 940 goalie in Buffalo and he is in Boston. Like it's, there's a lot of team effects right now with the way goalies are playing. And early on this year, that's part of what the Leafs were bringing to the table. And they haven't been as good. You know, Riley's rusty and Sandin's coming back and, you know, the D hasn't been as good. And hey, the goalie doesn't look as good right now.
Dude, it's so funny because the score effects with goaltenders and all the way that we judge these things. I don't know if they started to do international competition tomorrow and they decided, okay, everyone go pick your goalies, right? I think it'd be pretty easy for the States. They would say, yep, we're fine. We're going to go with Hellebuck and Ottinger will be pretty much right behind him. And it would be the same for Russia, right? Where they would say, it's like, we're obviously giving it to Vasilevsky, but we've got Shesterkin behind him. I have no idea what Canada would do. Like, I kind of think Carter Hart is the guy, but then you look at, again, these numbers of all these different dudes and I just... The way that we're going to measure goaltenders moving forward, I don't know how we evaluate them anymore because it's not stats, right? It's so dependent on the situation now, and the quality of chances has gone up so much. I was talking about this with Kevin Woodley a couple weeks ago that we are no, it wasn't him. It was Steve Valiquette that we were discussing this with, and just you know, to some of the places where guys are getting chances from, and what teams are doing, and some of the different caliber of teams that we're seeing. And I just I would hate to be someone that is in kind of Kyle Dubas' shoes or in a Canada hockey shoes where you've got to try to evaluate, hey, what are we doing here in terms of we don't have one of the only handful of surefire guys in the NHL. Like, I don't know how we're evaluating the position anymore. Who's judging this?
Yeah, at the draft in Montreal, it was so interesting. I was on the draft floor and I was talking to some executives with other teams and I was mostly curious about the teams that were looking for goalies or were thinking about what they were doing at their goalie position because the Leafs, obviously, that was like a big part of their draft was what they were going to do there. And talking to other teams and talking to some of the best teams in the league, you know, and they were saying off the record, they're like, yeah, I think the way to go now is like, don't spend a lot of money there. Don't commit a lot of term there. Mm-hmm. Take a chance on, you know, buy some lottery tickets and because... Who knows? And a lot of it is team influenced. So, you know, you look around the league, like how many surefire things are there in net right now? It's like Vasilevsky, Shesterkin, Hellebuck,
the
Sorokin and with the Islanders. Like there's not very many guys. And then after that, it's like, that's a whole bunch of who's. And, you know, unfortunately for Canada, or maybe fortunately, given that there's no Olympics or best on best coming right now, is like they're Canada's fallen way off in goaltending. And this has been a problem that's been brewing for 15, 20 years. It's been a long time. I went over to Europe and I went to some of the goaltending schools over there and I wrote about this in 2013. And at that point you could really see that the number of Canadians playing goal in the NHL had dropped. I think they were down to 36% of the minutes were Canadians at that point. And it had fallen from, it was basically cut in half from where it had been earlier. And that trend has only continued. You know, there's no sure things in net. And it really starts at the grassroots level in Canada, and it's something that they've got to fix. And they've been talking about it for a long time. And when I say talking, I mean there's been a lot of like arguing about it on the Hockey Canada side. And you look at other countries like Russia is a perfect example. 10 years ago, they found solutions and they found a way to move forward. And look at how many elite goalies are coming out of Russia right now. Like their next wave is coming is really, really good too. So I think it's going to be a big problem. I think it's going to be a big story the next time that we do get back to an Olympics or a World Cup.
Yeah, Canada's just got to do the soccer move where they go to one of these young Russian goalies and say, hey, you're not going to play. So you want to drop the off your name and just move here?
Look at what's happening in Russia. I mean, it's not impossible that might. But Canada, I don't know. Something's got to change it. And like I said, it goes way down to the grassroots level where it's got to change because, you know, even you look at the World Juniors and if they potentially don't end up winning gold, gold is going to be a huge reason why.
No, they will. They will. Trust me.
Big game.
Big game. Yeah, no, but it's fine. It's going to be okay. We're going to win. James Riddle, thanks for coming on, buddy. Always great.
Yeah, thank you.
See you, pal. Editor at The Athletic. We'll do that more often. Yeah, Canada's going to kick their ass tonight.
I'm looking at the goalie landscape, and Canada is by far
the
bottom of the barrel. It's bad.
No, there's some people who were kicking around over the holiday break the idea of, would Matt Murray be the guy? And I went, no, let's not get out of our minds here, but
now
he could be on the team.
Dude, like I'm looking at the numbers. Logan Thompson is one of the best.
No, I know. But again, this is what's hard. The good teams in the league that really defend well right now, and this is the Kevin Woodley thing.
Yeah.
There are some teams right now that are just doing an excellent job in terms of the situation that they put in front of their goaltenders. Mm-hmm. And it's hilarious because forever the Leafs have been one of the worst, right?
Yeah.
And that was always the difficulty of judging Freddie Anderson a lot of the times is you went, well, okay, so he played poorly in some playoff games, then he played some really great playoff games, but this team has been so fire wagon all season long, he needs to carry a lot of load. Like, it would... Parsing out who he was as a goaltender was tough because of the environment that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the opposite where I actually, I'm a little bit more concerned about Samsonov just because it's a poor stretch on a team that defends really well.
Mm-hmm.
And have the Leafs been as tight every single night? Were they tight in the first period last night? No.
They
started slow, whatever. But yeah, that's a pretty routine save.
Yeah.
And
especially the shorthanded one was
that's what I'm saying.
It's bizarre.
But yeah, I don't know what Logan Thompson is.
Yeah, Logan Thompson. Like, there's Tristan Jarry, Carter Hart, Jones.
Yeah, no. Some of those names you're just listing, but it's like,
no, I know, but it's a brutal landscape.
No, but I do think that right now, if Canada, because I already thought about this, if Canada was fielding goaltenders and they decided, okay, we're gonna go to an event that is international that for whatever reason. We just cannot figure out in this sport, best on best. Nope. Just enjoy the juniors. Enjoy watching Connor Bedard in a Canada sweater.
Yeah.
Because you'll never see it again.
You'll never see it again.
Okay? So you better watch it tonight.
Until he goes to Anaheim, they get eliminated from the playoffs and he plays at the World Championships.
Dude, I said I'd kill Pete. I'll kill you if you say Connor Bedard in Anaheim again. I think if it was tomorrow, it would probably be Carter Hart, Tristan Jarry, and Darcy Kemper.
Mm. No Binnington?
No,
not Bennington.
Hell no.
I thought you were going to say Murray as your third pick.
No.
Over Kemper.
Absolutely.
But I could see that.
Bennington's save this year is sub 900, and I know that his team isn't great, but yeah, I don't need to. Anyway, I know. Yeah, I'm not bringing
Bennington. After what you saw last night.
We're trying to get Bennington on podcast. I'm not going to keep trash, but yeah, he's not in consideration. Matt Murray's ahead of him for sure.
I do think the goaltending would have made the difference if we had gone to the Olympics. I think the U.S. has a huge advantage there.
I think Russia has the advantage. They have the ultimate advantage.
Canada still
wins.
Yeah,
that's true. Canada still wins, eh?
Canada's GOAT. That's the thing. They've deprived us of so many gold medals, so many great moments. We would have won every single time. We're going to win tonight. Quick break. Let's come back and let's talk Super Bowl odds.
Discussing the biggest stories that matter to Toronto sports fans. The Fan Morning Show with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's time for action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. So, it's weird because I didn't get to really any football stuff this week just because it was a long weekend and we had a full show yesterday. It's been an obviously very trying week for the NFL. They try to figure out their schedule and the health of one of their players. So these Super Bowl odds are kind of weird to me because we have this game that apparently it's not going to resume this week, Bills-Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
Which was everybody's basic assumption was this is going to happen. Maybe they move it to Thursday Night Football, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
It doesn't appear to be happening.
No. It would have to happen today if it was going to happen. So
yeah. I think that the league is waiting on the clear on DeMar Hamlin before they figure out what they're going to do with that game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to start scheduling things. That being said, they do have to play it. Like they've got to play it. They simply have no. The one from that game that I hadn't thought about, and because I wasn't in my fantasy football finals, is that some leagues are just shutting it down where they're going that the league is over.
Yeah, there's one league that I'm in that we already paid out because I was like 80 points ahead. Mm-hmm. So we like they just ended the week.
Yeah.
But there's another one where I'm tied with someone and like I have Chase Nias Mixon.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what do we do?
You gotta wait.
We're just waiting.
You gotta wait.
There's no winner right now.
Yeah, I don't know what the protocol is.
Yeah. Especially people with Josh Allen, too, because everyone has Josh Allen.
Yeah, of course. No, there's tons of implications still that you're waiting for from that game. Anyway, I'm going to rapid fire this immediately. Okay? You ready for this? I'm going to rapid fire some thoughts that I had from the weekend before I do my bets.
Okay.
Rapid fire.
Once again, I would like credit for always being right, and I said to Vikings fans all season long that you were frauds, and I never believed in you, and I laughed at you the entire time that you ever considered that you could win, and look at you now. You're just in the same nightmare that you will be in until Aaron Rodgers retires. It's actually kind of embarrassing that you ever thought you had a chance, and anybody that went, we're actually clutch because we win close games, is like, oh my God. Your team is so bad. You can't get stops. You can't get stops. You have one player, and then you couldn't get the ball to that player in that game, and he had a huge meltdown to the point where he basically Brett Laurie'd an official where he spiked the helmet into somebody's back. So, yeah, Vikings, If I was a Vikings fan, I'd rather be outside of the playoffs because then at least you'd have a higher draft pick.
They are 12-4 with a negative 19-point differential.
Seahawks, it's the worst-case scenario. I hate it. They get an unfair playoff situation where they play before the Packers and the Lions.
Yep.
Seattle is likely going to win that game. And then
Seattle playing the Rams.
Yeah. Yep. Seattle's going to likely win that game.
Yep.
But then the Lions
Sunday night game.
I think the Lions won't lay down and die in that game. That's just, and we'll get into that later in the week, but it still is unfair. It still is. I get it. The NFL, and I'm actually kind of happy. I'll tell you this. I'm a bigger man than most people. I'm actually happy for Lions fans because they've had nothing. And as a Seahawks fan who's experienced the Super Bowl, I will tell you that I'm happy that this is kind of your guys' Super Bowl, that you have a game where you might be able to get into the playoffs. That's really cool. That's really something for you guys. So,
against a division rival.
And I like the Lions. I'm in on the Lions. So, you know,
You've been on the Lions for a while. That's
yeah, exactly.
Your team.
I'm stoked. I'm stoked on the Lions. I like the Lions. I'm okay with this. I hope they beat the Packers. But there is a part of me that actually, if I'm going to open up my dark secret, I wouldn't hate it if Seattle lost and the Lions just played like my Lions just played the
Those
Packers.
Those two games
for a spot.
Should both be at 4:25.
Yeah,
makes no sense.
No, it's really stupid. Anyway, it's not fair to the Seahawks, but they're just not a good team. And just because they slowed down Mike White with zero ribs doesn't mean that the defense is good now. So they're kind of in the same categories. They're not as bad as the Vikings, but they're in that same category. All of a sudden, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers are a little scary. I don't think that I said this all along, and I believe it to be true still now. I don't think that they can win multiple rounds. But if you're playing in the first round or you're playing them in the second round, something like that, it's not going to feel very good. Yeah. The longer he's hanging around in the NFC, which is watered down and pretty weak, like if you're a Cowboys fan right now and you're watching your team be trashed just about every single week, you really want to see Tom Brady and him and Mike Evans figuring out? No, I don't think so. The Patriots fluked out again. And their defensive touchdown stat is becoming one of my favorite things in all of professional sports where I'm just waiting for it. It's just like, it's kind of funny to me that everyone keeps saying Belichick's washed, and then here's defenses, top three DVOA since like week three, and they score a defensive touchdown every week. Just something to consider when everybody's crying and pouting about what his future is. The Rivera audio of him not knowing that his team could be eliminated from the playoffs is going to go down in dumb coaching history. That drop of we could be eliminated. That's going to be used in perpetuity.
Yeah.
Whenever we talk about eliminations, it's an audio meme. It's going to be used on pods. It's going to be used on sports show. We could be eliminated. That's a really tough look for Ronnie.
What do you say to people that say he was focused on winning?
Yeah, I say that he
should know.
He should have not started Carson Wentz then. Yeah. He should have decided that the guy that his entire locker room hates, he shouldn't have put in that quarterback in a week that he was trying to win. And then lastly, the Giants Dable Dimes thing. It's weird to root for New York sports, but I'm really rooting for the Giants too. I really like this Giants team. I like the Danny Dimes vibe. Brian Daboll, the
great guy.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
He's awesome. Looks exactly like Ben's producer, Mike Gentile. So they're like twins. They could not look. Every time I see him hugging him, I go, that's cool, Gentile. that's cool, Gentile. Anyway, this is a betting segment, so I am going to just say this quickly. I think that there's one pick when it comes to Super Bowl odds that I actually like, and it's the Chargers at plus 2,500. The Chiefs are... The Chiefs, Bills, and Eagles, I don't see a lot of value there. I think that there's a little bit with the Niners because the Purdy thing seems to be quite real. Although, that's the hesitation there. That the only reason that they are different from the rest of those teams is because it's saying, hey, you really going to think Brock Purdy wins multiple games and is going to win a road game? The Bengals at plus 750 is actually kind of interesting in terms of, I'm not sure why they're down an echelon. Cowboys plus 1,000 is insane. Like, you get committed to Moon Jail immediately if you bet that. I tried to talk myself a little bit into Ravens plus 3,000 with Lamar coming back, but no.
Too many unknowns.
I'm not doing that. No. Packers aren't even in yet.
Yeah.
They got the same odds, as,
the Vikings.
I know. It's so good. I can't talk myself into any other team winning that's down the line, down the tier. It's just not going to happen. But the Chargers at plus 2,500. My case is just pretty simple. They're getting healthier. They've got elite weapons. They've got a pass rush. And they've got a quarterback who sits among the best group of guys in the NFL. He can single-handedly win them games. I could absolutely see him getting on a hot streak and actually pulling this off. Anyway, I'm going to talk to Josh Palmer today, Canadian wide receiver. And nice. We're going to run that on the pod tomorrow. I'm excited to talk to him about what it's like playing with that guy, because people have always discussed, you know, what Herbert's like as a leader. Either way, I think that's the bet. I think that's the only one. I think it's the Chargers. Anyway, quick break. Come back. Talk to Ben Ennis. That was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus. Must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Ben Ennis here in studio next.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, Benny?
Hey. This is the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been in here, but never for your show. Never this early.
No, we used to do 9 to...
Yeah, but we were never in here.
Yeah, we did some in here. Remember, we'd have
rarely
to come in. Yeah, I know, but this was the nice voice studio.
Well, I've never had the cameras on in this studio.
Yeah.
I dressed up, wore a hat and everything. Yeah.
No, well, you wearing a hat is foolish.
Why is that?
Because you're a good hair guy.
Today's haircut day, though.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's the issue. Like, no, you don't want this... This uncovered is, by hat.
This is the thing, you know, for me anyway.
What's the
hair
thing?
Just looks the same, the same, the same, the same, the same. And then one day it's just, oh my God, you freak. What are you doing? Put a hat on because the top gets too high. Mm. And then all of a sudden you get it too long on the sides. And yeah, you look disheveled.
Yeah, no, I do right now. I'm in my disheveled mode.
Yeah, now I'm seeing it.
Yeah, it's way too long.
It's just that normally the rest of you is disheveled, and so I'm a little distracted by...
You have a smaller head than me,
too. Yeah, well, you have a huge head,
I mean, most people, other than Kevin Mensch, have smaller heads than me.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
I was going to say, you're the type of guy who wore an adult bike helmet when you were a kid, and you probably wore it more than when you're on your bike.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I don't know. Does the big head, does it make the long hair stand out then? Like, what is the mathematics on the needing a haircut with the big head? Tell me.
Yeah,
I don't look at myself as much as you look at me.
Yeah, but I assume that I've always assumed bigger head, bigger brain. So it should be you that figures this out. But
yeah, we've also known each other long enough to know that that's not true.
It's very true. It's very true. I have a peanut head.
Yeah, it's really tiny.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're a small person in general.
I wouldn't say that. Pete is a small person in general, okay?
I mean, there's a reason why, you know, I saw that New York Times article about the small people and thought of
that.
You.
Don't say that.
No. That's... No, you should have been warmed by that.
Here's what I will say, honestly. So, and I think this actually comes up too frequently. I guess every once in a while I'll get the odd person in my mentions. Every once in a while, I'll go on, you know, I've been on I've gone on some dates, okay?
Nice.
Not to brag.
Good
yeah,
for you.
Not to brag.
Congrats.
But normally when that happens, they go, oh, you're actually the height that you listed it at. I'm like, yeah.
Because you listed it at.
Well, most
guys. On these apps, you put in your details, height. Like
yeah,
your measurements?
You yeah, you have to.
Really?
Yeah.
No, like honestly, I know your boys are laughing at me because I have no idea.
Yeah, you guys got to remember.
I've been married for 100 years and with my
Ben's
wife
older than Homer Simpson
than
was in the cartoon. Oh, yeah. I made him aware of that. Yeah. He's just
older than the cartoon. Wow,
he's older than Homer Simpson was. So.
Well, yeah. Homer's. How old is Homer in the cartoon?
38.
Really? Wow. I thought he was even younger than that.
No, okay. He's 38. Yeah. I was, like I said, I was watching an episode and they said it.
Yeah.
And then I immediately texted you. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. It's that's a tough one though. That's a tough one because it's like, you know, I'm not that far away.
Yeah.
No, I'm coming around the Homer Simpson. Once you hit the Homer Simpson, it's just kind of like, I don't know how you, and Joe is
I didn't know this was a bar in life.
No, turn your mic off though. Don't talk.
My bad.
I'm just kidding.
you're gonna make fun of me for being young, so I had to come in and send a show.
I know, but you were getting way. I could see your stupid little face getting way too excited by that fact. Like you started. You know, like when someone's playing video games and they got to get intense and they lean forward, and that's what Joe just was like. Oh yeah, it's lock in mode.
Yeah, here we go.
I'm getting a shot in here. I forgot where I was at with this.
I don't know.
The dating apps, the measurements and everything. Yeah.
Right. But I do know that here's the thing. Like I'm 5'10".
Uh-huh.
But yeah, because you'll get, like women will tell you, well, you're not short. But my reaction is never like, I know that. It's always like, yeah. No, I don't want to talk about this anymore. Move on to the next thing. So yeah, I think that's a true sign.
5'10 is perfectly average height for a North American male.
Yeah.
That's why I'm above average at 6 feet even.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't imagine writing a 5.
Like, that's
first.
Your only thing. That's your only thing that you're above average in.
Well, and hair.
Yeah.
Usually.
But again, not today.
No, I know.
So
I'm not taking advantage of my one thing.
As of right now, nothing.
Yeah.
Just the one thing.
Yeah.
The one thing you got going.
Mm-hmm.
6 feet. Congrats. Hey, everybody, give Ben a clap. Like, let's
thanks, have
a
thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for that. Okay, so we will talk sports. You had a good holiday, though, and you're leaving on a new holiday.
Yeah, this is a weird... what is this week? Like, the roads are empty still, right? Like, I left early, and I said I could only do this hour.
Schools aren't back.
That's correct.
You told me this, actually.
Yeah, I know. Why? This is what you do. I give you information, and then you regurgitate it back
I said,
to me.
I was like, somebody told me with children
no,
that.
It was me.
It was you, yeah. No, it was you. You're talking on the phone, and you told me that.
So I guess that's part of it, but I don't think kids are necessarily on the highways. I guess adults, though, the parents, they take the extra week off because they have to be at home with their kids.
You know what, though? We were wondering this, and now we can ask the youths, because, again, Joe is 22 years old.
I am.
See, I got your name right. That was really respectful of me, right?
My name right?
No, your age.
Oh, my age. Yeah,
boy.
Yeah. He always calls me 21.
Yeah.
He always takes the extra year off.
Because I'm pretty sure you were 21 when I hired you.
Yeah.
No, my birthday's in May, so I would have been 22.
21, 22. Joe. It's all the same to me. Oh, no, God.
I'm really fighting for this extra year.
Why?
Because
you should be happy to be 21.
Because he's so young. It's like being short where you go, where someone goes, I'm actually 5'10 and a half. And people go, that's weird that you think about it that way. That's a sure sign you're short. A sure sign you're young is when you go, I'm 7 3/4. And that's Joe, right? He's literally.
Yeah, but you do that when you're like 7 years old. You're like, I'm 7 1/2.
But
21, once you like hit your 20s or 21, when you can legally drink in the United States, then you don't want to be any older than that. Why would you ever want to be older than 21?
I don't know.
You can rent a car, like, I think at 25,
but I'm just trying to think of, like, my favorite ages that I was in. 21 was kind of like you're broke and you're coming out of school, and it's just like, that's not it. Like, it's not the one. It is for certain things, but it's not for that. And plus, like, you don't have you don't feel comfortable in bars yet. You don't know about them. Like, it's
I'm not talking about who you actually like. You know, saying you're 25.
Then forget it. Why do we get bogged down in this? This was nothing. This was nothing important. This was not supposed to be anything. What I wanted to ask Joe was winter vacation like? We're so old now that we don't remember. I thought Christmas break was like the same thing as a job where you were off for like a week and a half. Was Christmas break always 2 weeks?
Christmas break is always 2 weeks, and some years I even had 3. I'm not even kidding.
Three?
Some years it was almost 3 weeks.
Joe, where did you go to being, that was just called being suspended. Yeah. They were like, yeah.
No.
Why don't you take an extra week off?
No, but yeah. It was always two. That's right.
Sometimes when the weather got really warm, I would have like 2 months off. Yeah. It was really weird.
It was wild. Man. I would wake up, I'd put all my school clothes on, I would go downstairs, and my dad would say, still no school, Joe.
No, but I'd
freak out.
Whoa.
Yeah, so anyway, apparently that is it. So yeah, you're right. This has been a weird holidays. I tried to kick it around in the room. Nobody gave me even a sliver of a bite back. You know, I just said that this holiday felt strange to me. Christmas just came up. It was all like, oh my God, it's Christmas.
Well, yeah, it was weird that Christmas was on a Sunday, right?
Yeah,
so it went right into it.
That was it.
Christmas Eve. And then for me, it was weird because, you know, we had some vomit in my household.
Yeah,
my kid was puking
more than
over
usual.
Christmas. Yeah. Well, and usually we do have some vomit. But yeah, my kid was sick. I was sick. Weather was garbage. We didn't make it to Legoland, so that was good. But it was. I would classify it as a meh Christmas vacation.
Yeah,
that's why we need to go away next week, and we will.
I know that's infuriating.
Why?
I don't know. I feel like when you finish the Christmas break. And maybe you're doing something that's kind of a veteran maneuver.
Uh-huh.
But the usual is, hey, you've just had time to rest.
Mm-hmm.
And in the sporting world, yeah, now we're in it. It's kind of kick up time for a little while. And then you realize it's actually not for a little while longer.
It's not. No. Nope.
This is actually more the dog days of the sports calendar than you think.
Yep.
Like, all of a sudden, it's going to be... Huh?
2 months away from the NHL trade deadline? 2 months.
Yeah.
Two months of this?
I was thinking about this. Hey, actually, this is a good way to pivot into sports talk. Do you think that... So there's only 20 games on the schedule after the deadline. Do you think that's better or worse, having it... Like, the NBA's is in a month.
Yes.
And generally, the NBA is a better run league, you would agree? By a slight...
More than slight
I like
slight
every single
margin.
Measure possible.
Yes,
but
correct.
Yeah, anyway, so other than all the things we can quantify, you know, the NBA does a much better job than the NHL. But which one do you like better?
I mean... Which one do I like better?
Because I was thinking about it, and it feels weird that you can only bring a guy in where, okay, you at least trade for someone, right? And then
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they play that night.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, then they play the next night. Because the NHL trade deadline, I believe, is March 3rd. And I think they have a game that night. And if they don't, it's the next night. But you trade for somebody, they're probably not in the lineup. You're getting like 19 games of a player.
Right.
And yeah, do I think that chemistry is as important in sports sometimes as we make it seem? No. We were talking about this earlier with Yarncroc is, hey, he was playing with the bad players and he didn't play well. And now he's with the good players and they're going, wow, he's unbelievable, like right away.
Mm-hmm.
But
the thing
it does seem like a short runway.
Well, in a cap sport, in a hard cap sport like the NHL, having like prorated a minimal amount of the contract left
at
that point of the season.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were forced to take on more of the contract, we'd see even fewer moves, right? So I not to be like math man on you, former mathlete, math Olympian.
Will you tutor Pete?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, like legitimately. This is not a joke.
Sure.
This is a bit.
Pete, I need a lot of help, Ben.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Pete went to Queens, and so when I first met him, I was like, oh my God, this kid's really impressive. And then every single day... It's just a...
Just gets worse and worse.
Oh, my God, dude. It's the steepest descent. Like, I keep going down the stairs being like, where's the bottom? Anyway, what were you saying?
Who knows? No, I was saying, in the NHL, when there's a hard cap system, and, you're taking on pro rata portions of contracts, I don't know if you can afford to move it any further forward in the schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's so little to play for. I mean, in both regular seasons, I guess, but I guess now with the insertion of the play-in tournament in the NBA and the impetus to get out of that, which the Raptors felt last year and were able to accomplish, and this year, like, opposite, they want to be nowhere near the play-in tournament. I don't have a necessarily a definitive take on what I prefer, more time with the guys you traded for or less.
Yeah, this has been a recent me thinking about this.
Yeah.
Like, I've only been thinking about this.
I'm thinking back to 2019, right, and the Marc Gasol trade and, like, the Raptors.
Sometimes.
Yeah, the shoring up what would eventually be a championship core. And it felt like that was plenty, that was, well, and we're, I guess... I would be making the opposite case. But yeah, that felt like more than enough time to see what you had in that Raptors team.
It was also the perfect guy to drop in right. on that team in Marc Gasol. Like mm-hmm. if you were going to draft a, if there was an all chemistry team, mm-hmm. right, throughout NBA history of centers that you could just plop down on any basketball team and they would fit in right away, you'd probably pick the big friendly guy who's really smart, plays defense and passes the ball all the time.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably
just, probably knows how to cook too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm going to say he knows how to cook.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've been thinking about this because Toronto is actually, I was even going through the rankings of cities that are caring more about the deadline than anybody else, right? Mm-hmm. And Toronto is in this very, very unique position where both the basketball and the hockey team, all of the fans are just hyper fixated on what is going to happen in those markets. Like, I think everybody cares about the trade deadline and people always kind of dream on either trading somebody or selling someone. Like Canucks fans right now are really thinking about, you know, who's going to go out the door and, yeah, of course they're there. They don't have a basketball team, so it's not fair. Maybe they're Portland Trailblazers fans, or maybe they are Raptors fans. Maybe they're in on that too, but whatever. Either way, just like local market-wise, Raptors fans want to know if they're going to sell and how drastic the cutting to this core is. And it's going to be basically the first time where they've made major changes since Kawhi. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs are in a spot where, as fun as the regulars, like last night's game was great. It was a really fun up and down game, and Nylander's been brilliant, and Marner's been brilliant, and Matthews, and their core is hitting the stride, and they've had a bunch of injuries, so they've had to get a look at a lot of players, and they've had two new goaltenders. But even that, it just feels like, yeah, the 2 months getting to the trade deadline is going to be a slog for Maple Leaf fans, and it is going to be a lot of dreaming on who could this team add, and who would they possibly remove, and do they entertain a nice trade, like whatever. Which of these two deadlines are you more interested in, the Raptors or the Leafs?
To me, there's like only one answer, because there's one team that has a chance to win a championship with the move at the deadline, and it's the Toronto Maple Leafs. And like, not to discount the possibility that might happen with the Raptors, because it is like it's in the realm of possibility. It's a very low percentage chance that the Raptors do this scorched earth rebuild and somehow, or it's, I mean, if it was going to be a move that turned this team into a championship contender, it probably wouldn't be that. It'd be more of a tweak where, yeah, you're keeping your core of OG Pascal and Scotty Barnes, and you're recouping some future assets that you're able to turn around and make, moves to make you competitive in 2023-24. I mean, that's possible. But it's not all that realistic. What is realistic is the Toronto Maple Leafs going out and, I don't know, getting Bo Horvat and throwing him on the second line. And he scores a massive goal in the postseason. The Leafs get through the first round, second round, and all of a sudden there's a parade going down Yonge Street. Like, I don't know how you can have an opposite opinion that it's more important for the team that can win a championship. And again, the Raptors can. And maybe what happens in the next month is integral to doing that. It's probably going to take more than just one move. Like, Leafs, it's one move.
See, that's why I think that the Raptors are far more fascinating. Like, to me, I'm infinitely more...
Wait, what did you say? Fascinating or important?
No, I'm just, which one am I more interested in? No, I said, which one are you more interested in? So it's like, it's like this is an MVP debate. You can define sort of the terms.
Because, yeah, you like hope. Like, you like pushing off your hope into the future, right?
No.
Like, because the final exam for the Leafs is going to come, like, immediately, right? Like, you're going to know the outcome of the trade deadline, up, down, Kyle Dubas' future, re-sign, going elsewhere. Raptors trade, whether it's, your favorite trade for the unprotected Lakers picks, like, okay, either that's like a long-term plan where you see those things play out, or you're talking about an offseason where you're flipping those, or a couple off seasons from now. Like, that's just it's a longer outlay.
So to me, it's just which one has more like doors.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So, and that's
there's no debate about that.
And that's what I think about the Raptors one. The Leafs one is cool because I keep using the same thing over and over, the same reference point, but they remind me of a good team that ends up with a high pick in a draft where you get to say, oh yeah, take the best player available. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about position.
That's
you don't
right.
have to prioritize it. You just go,
yeah,
hey, guess what? An awesome left winger that can play in your top six ends up at a good price for you where you can fit it in, do it. A third line center like a Taves, mm-hmm. wants to play for you and you have the pieces to get it done with Chicago, do it. A defenseman that can play 20 minutes a night, that gives you some great, hey, a defenseman, maybe, like, I talked about Erik Karlsson today and how I don't think that it should be completely removed, the idea of even going after a guy like that who's having a special season, right?
Five and, teams retaining salary? I don't know how that works.
Well, it just, to me, if you're the Leafs too, though, you have this real two-year window of guaranteed with these guys where even, and guess what? The cap might go up and, well, it looks like it is going to go up and maybe the Karlsson contract gets a little bit more palatable.
What you're describing is kind of an Alex Anthopoulos 2015 trade deadline, right?
Yeah.
Especially, and the parallels between Kyle Dubas and Anthopoulos at that time like are too obvious, right? That Anthopoulos, you know, everybody wanted him to return as the GM emeritus, but he was out the door. But he was out the door at the beginning of that season because of the failed 2013 Marlins trade, right? And then they go out and grab Mark Shapiro because they figure they're going to have to turn this thing over. And then lo and behold, they rejuvenate the fan base with an incredible trade deadline and then the playoff, yada, 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 yada.
What would be hilarious is if this approach, and I don't think that this is actually going to happen, but this does go into the window of the trade deadline, is if this approach of not giving Dubas the extension did make him more aggressive like Anthopoulos and that he actually was secretly saying, you didn't believe in me.
Yeah.
I'm going to explore my market.
Dude,
and so, yeah.
Yeah. And, no, I was thinking about that today.
I don't think so, though.
Well,
here's the thing. He's from Ontario.
And if they win a championship, like, he's like, you know what? I would like to be the first GM on Legends Row.
No, that's if he was an American general manager and he was, so if this
Anthopoulos was a Canadian guy, though, too.
Yeah, but they didn't want him.
Well, above Mark Shapiro said, you do want him, it turns out.
And then he went, well, I'll try. And then he went in there and said, you're a bad little boy.
Yeah.
You're a bad little boy who does bad little things. Anyway, to get back on track here, of course, the Leafs, like, both of them are fascinating. They're both extremely interesting. And so that's why I like this discussion, is you can make the case for both. For me, the Leafs, the biggest point of fascination is they could just about add anybody. You know, they're not going into this deadline. This isn't a month of them looking at they need a defenseman anymore, right? And so you keep going back and forth between the same conversation about the three same defensemen. Yep. That's really fun. And then there is the Dubas piece of it, which is, hey, how much power does this guy have? Is it complete, like, he could do anything he wants? It appears that they don't want to trade Knies. Mm-hmm. And given his value around the league and that he's been awesome, you would think that that's kind of what a weighty chip that is in a all-in window for someone that could potentially be playing for their job. I don't know. And who knows how high up that goes. But again, we don't know with all certainty, but it seems pretty clear that, to me anyway, he's very likely to be re-signed. It would take a real failure in the playoffs for it to go some other way, or Dubas deciding like he wants to explore his options. But again, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Either way, it's a fun and interesting piece of it. That said, the reason why I'm not as interested in it, I think that it probably makes more sense for them to try to add two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Dubas is smart enough where he will make a splash. Like, what did Freeman say yesterday? What was the quote?
On the 32 Thoughts podcast?
Yeah,
he was just talking about how he views the Leafs circumstance right now. And at first he thought they were just going to target a defenseman, but now he believes that they might be targeting two players or general depth rather than just the one position.
But I just think Dubas is really smart and calculated. He's not the type of guy, and he's not in the type of situation where they need to make an extremely splashy move to get something done and to validate everybody. There's going to be definitely, like, he did the Nick Foligno trade in that year where it felt like they needed to do something. He gave a first-round pick. It's been wildly criticized. Normally at the deadline in the NHL, you make mistakes. You don't normally win by adding. It's just, it happens. Teams have done it, and, you know, you point to certain examples. But in the most, like, for the most part, let's say that, like, was that the sexiest option, realistic ones, is that they get a Bo Horvat, right? And he's not even really directly linked to Toronto right now. Who else? Like, who's the, like, Timo Meier? Mm-hmm. Okay, like, that's a fun thing, but that's just, like, a guy who plays maybe 18 minutes a night and who's still the Leafs, you know, fifth or sixth best guy.
Patrick Kane.
Yeah, well, I don't think that one's realistic, but maybe it is. Who knows? I just, That would probably be the sexiest one from a name standpoint. And you're holy hell. Like, that's just, like, that's pretty outrageous. He or Karlsson would be the name that you add the most. Either way, to me, it just doesn't change the complexion of the team. You know what you have in the team. you're still waiting for the playoffs for that to kind of get done. The reason why the Raptors one is so fascinating to me, I think that they could trade Fred. I think that they could trade OG.
Yeah.
I think that they, did you read Grange?
Yeah.
So this is from Michael Grange. He wrote this last night, I think. I read it last night. Quote, as one league source who has been monitoring the Raptors' situation closely in recent weeks put it to me.
Are you going to swear like he swore in his column? He said that they get a bleep ton return.
Oh, yeah, he did say that. But he said Toronto are the first domino. They will do... what they do will affect teams all across the league. Dallas, Phoenix, Los Angeles, Atlanta. Not that it's all about deals with any particular team, just that people are going to wait to see what the Raptors do before they make their moves. Toronto could set the market, end quote. I actually think that's super interesting because you have teams like Chicago and Washington who are very likely trying to get into the Wembanyama sweepstakes and looking to offload certain players, right? And maybe the Raptors actually feel a little emboldened. I thought, hey, you know, I made the case yesterday. Hey, they actually have to kind of get moving on this. Because you don't want to win any more games. We saw the Connor Bedard thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Wembanyama might be, like, he's going to be far more impactful in his sport, very likely, than Connor Bedard is going to be. And I was saying, hey, everybody make sure that if you can get a percentage point higher, great, great, great. With the Raptors, you know without a shadow of a doubt who you are in terms of, like, what the value is here. You're going to really enter an offseason where you have Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr. and you have to make, like, hardcore decisions on those two players? Like, for what? To get into a plant? You think the Raptors can win? Let's say best case scenario happens. They actually, from a winning standpoint, they go out and they try to add a shooter at the deadline. They find a way. It's crazy talk.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, what could they, you know, be? Nothing. Like, they can't be anything.
No.
The vibes around the team aren't very good. You saw the way Nick Nurse talked about them the other day. Yes. Like, it's just...
But then they won.
Yeah, they did.
I agree with everything that you're saying. The difference between you and I, and it actually harkens back to a conversation we've had before about, I believe it was going into an NBA season and it was a preview, and it might have been actually Donovan Bennett was in studio with us. And I think you asked the question, what are you most interested in? What happens on the court in the NBA or what happens off the court in the NBA? And my mind was swimming that anyone would ever answer off the court.
No,
and what you're
it's obviously on the court for me, but if you're talking about the regular season,
yeah.
Would I rather watch, you know, that Raptors play the shorthanded Suns?
Well, okay. But
or would I rather talk about the trade deadline?
No kidding.
Yeah.
Would I rather
see the NBA finals?
Would you rather see the Toronto Maple Leafs in the final 20 games of the regular season play with Bo Horvat and see if he plays on the wing with Tavares or, you know,
he would. And that's the thing. It's like he would, and then I would see it, and I'd see him 18 minutes a
night. Then you try and dream on what that looks like in the postseason, and then, you get to see it play out in front of you in real time with a chance to win a championship as opposed to two unprotected Lakers picks, and then losses, more losses. Bring on the losses. That's what you should be rooting for now.
First of all, I'm pretty – I will admit that. Maybe
you love watching losses. You love tanking.
No.
This is your thing.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing in North American pro sports.
Yep.
And I know it's a reality, so it's something you should root for as a sports fan, but it's the worst. Like, no one should enjoy watching it.
No. That's the thing. For me, it's not the worst.
Yeah, you're an idiot.
Yeah, no, for me, I'm just saying, I'm telling you the truth. And I said this on the break. It's true. It's true. I am a truth teller. big truth guy.
Yeah. Everybody knows that about you.
Yeah. Big nose, but not a Pinocchio guy. Like, this didn't grow from lies.
Yeah.
I told you, I'm rooting for the Seahawks in a small way, in a halfway for them to lose, because I think the Packers are going to win this weekend. Mm-hmm. And so I'm saying, just lose anyway. Lose anyway. Don't make me watch this Packers game with...
Well, and then it turns it into a win-or-go-home game for the Lions, exactly.
But it's just that Seattle
that
sucks.
Better.
They can't win.
Yeah,
it's not even like there are certain teams that can't win where you really want them in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Like if I'm a Lions fan, I'm saying I want them in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this season to end. This is extremely fun.
Isn't it enough to have the Broncos pick? Like, you still need more.
Of course you need more. That's the whole point with the Raptors.
I know.
The Raptors are not in a position. There's no lottery in the NFL, though, right? Yeah,
like,
but that's it. That's why it's even more impactful if they end up losing is because definitively. Yeah, I just seeing them get shelled in a playoff game, it doesn't do much for me. Like, it doesn't. I know that they're a fraudulent team, and I know that there's nothing that them playing in the playoffs is all of a sudden going to make Tyreek Woolen a better cornerback next year. Like, I just don't believe that. I think that they're already playing in high stakes games, and that's the way that the sport is, that playoffs don't matter as much. It's not like a series in basketball or hockey where I think if you're a young team, you want to get in there. You want to see what it's like. You want to feel the intensity change. The Raptors know it. Siakam knows it. You know, Fred knows it. OG knows it. All these guys have already been there. Scotty only got a little taste of it last year, but who's dying to see more Scotty Barnes this year? My God. Like, I was sick. I'm
he
ready.
He needs to go away and he needs to, hit the gym 26 hours a day.
Dude, Scotty Barnes, this is going to be a very interesting offseason. Yes. Either way, progress isn't linear, and we had stupid conversations about Tatum and Brown, so I'm not freaking out about it like some people are, but this has been an interesting PR turn, I think, from a lot of people. Like, it's been pretty interesting to see, like, how insanely popular someone can be to people grumbling, going like, that's not good.
You're the not to derail you here, but you have your finger on the pulse of the Twitter sentiment of all things Toronto sports.
Yeah.
Like, have the Raptor truthers now come around to the idea that Scotty Barnes, actually deserves some derision and some criticism this year?
I don't really like to criticize other people's, work and whatever. But like, just look at, a lot of the way that there's still this it was even in the, I can firmly say this because it's like even in the Grange piece where it's like, this is he and Blake are my two favorite Raptors writers ever. Yep. Listening, I'm close. But even this is like, talking about this Raptors team. How it's like they the optimism for 2022, 2023. And I'm I don't see that part of it. And I get it. Because,
well, he mentioned Scotty Barnes explicitly too. And it kind of reiterates like the Doug Smith column from a couple of weeks ago about how the front office is not all that pleased with what they're seeing.
Hey,
no kidding.
I basically sat courtside the other night. I can tell you this.
No big deal.
This is not a team that's like they love each other and they're having a blast.
All the vibes. Yeah, you got firsthand view of the vibes.
The body language stuff is pretty bad with this team. Right. Well, you can see it on TV. You can see it up close. But it's not great with these guys. And Barnes looks pissed off a lot. Fred looks pissed off a lot. Guys look pretty frustrated. OG's been pretty looking frustrated at times, as much as you can try to read up on his body.
Someone stole his juice.
I'm just saying, to me, I understand why people are doing the whole, hey, will the Raptors still have time angle? And I just,
this year?
Yeah, to a degree. Well, because the point that Grange lists in the piece is the correct one, which is that Siakam is so good that taking a step back seems on the surface to be such a stupid idea when you have a guy that's this good. Like, there's not that many players in the league.
But look at the game against the Pacers on Sunday. Four-fifths of the starters were good. I mean, Fred was abominable.
No, the Raptors suck. They can't win. They're not doing anything. Like, this is the point. This is why I think that their deadline is more interesting. It's not even just this deadline. It's being able to take whatever assets you get and then make another decision in the offseason of what are we doing with all of this stuff? Like, does another star become available? Do we try to re-pivot on the fly next to Siakam? Do we actually open up the floor to a Siakam trade? Does Siakam take it poorly? Does he want out all of a sudden? What is Masai Ujiri's, tenure with it? Like, what's his next move? Does Nick Nurse actually bear enough culpability here that they would consider getting rid of him, given that it seems like he's at odds with a couple of the players on the team right now? Like,
well, only 1 year deal, 1 year left on his deal.
And like, there's just so many questions that come off of what the Raptors' decisions are. To me, this is one of the most important deadlines in the team's history.
I'm not arguing with you about that.
I know you're not. I know, of course not. This isn't is either one of them interesting conversation. Mm-hmm. It's just like, which one is more fascinating to you? Given the outcome of scenarios for the Raptors and the idea that they can really kind of take a hatchet to some of their roster that isn't deep. Yeah. Like, people keep going, the Raptors aren't bad enough. The Raptors aren't bad enough. Yes, they are. If the Raptors lose OG Anunoby and Fred VanVleet from their roster, or they lose Gary Trent, who's scoring 30 a night for them right now, and Fred VanVleet from their roster, they're gonna be like big time losers. They're already losing a ton of games.
What are they, like, seventh from the bottom already right now? They're game up on OKC. Like, they're right there.
And this is the thing, and this is the other part of it. If the Raptors start losing those guys, they're not going to be deep enough. Siakam might be in the wind. They might shut him down. I actually think that there's a couple things here. I'm not as convinced that the Bulls are going to blow things up as I once was.
Yeah. Because what their pick is they have to be top four protected, right?
The Wizards are probably going to trade Kuzma, who's extremely important to them. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that they can get rid of Beal and Porzingis. Mm-hmm. which will maybe be enough to win them a few games. Everybody above them is like a non-consideration to be with the Raptors, but I think that the Magic can go on a little bit of a run here and be decent, and then all of a sudden, like, it's weird to say this, but the Raptors have this like back-to-back coming up against the Hornets, and I'm like, if you can find a way to lose those two games, you're like right in it with the Hornets. Yeah. Anyway, and like the Lakers are going to continue to get better. The teams that I only really see that are conclusively going to finish below the Raptors, Spurs and Rockets, like that's done. Those are not... It's not going to happen. And then, yeah, the Pistons. But if you can get somehow into that top four with lottery odds for Wembanyama.
No doubt.
Like, you have to try to do that. And so,
they should
taking
be doing
a hatchet,
it now.
That's exactly. That's And that's my point, is ahead of the Charlotte game is where I'd be really interested to see if all of a sudden before the Charlotte game they go, yeah, there's a couple guys on the injury report.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're starting to make sure that guys stay healthy so that we can trade them. Here's what's also fascinating, though. Mm-hmm. What do you do with Fred, given that he's looked so horrible this season and that he's been hurt? Like, what's his trade value? Mm-hmm. What do you do with Gary Trent when he actually shows that he's the guy that seems to have an awesome amount of chemistry with Pascal Siakam and that he's the way the league is going, and he's actually kind of showing you more when it comes to his offensive profile and what he could be on this team, and especially if he's willing to accept a six-man Tyler Hero kind of role? Mm-hmm. What happens with OG Anunoby? Because, yeah, you can get... It's on record. Everyone wants OG Anunoby. Somebody... I think it was Kevin O'Connor who had the tweet about...
Yeah.
No, Zach Lowe. Zach Lowe had the tweet that they could get
a Donovan Mitchell. Yes, yeah.
Which is, if you remember the bidding war that was coming down between them, it was multiple Knicks picks, RJ Barrett, that was on the table in that trade. And then with Cleveland... It was, they ended up giving up three first round picks, a guy who was picked in the first round that year, Lauri Markkanen and Colin Sexton, two other guys who were first round picks. Like,
it's weird because you want to keep, I don't think it's a scorched earth because you have a top 15 player in Pascal Siakam, and you do have a defending rookie of the year player in Scotty Barnes, despite the downturn this year, and a guy that's in the mix for defensive player of the year and OG Anunoby. Those are all good players. This team stinks. Like, and they do play.
Yeah.
Like, when they're healthy. And yeah, they've been banged up.
I don't think Scotty Barnes is very good this year. He's had some good games, but he's been a bad player this year overall.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to fight you on it.
Yeah.
He was pretty good last year, and that happened. So, and there's reasons to believe, there's reasons to understand why this is happening this year, that he wasn't as committed to his last offseason as he should have been, and maybe... After getting a splash of cold water on his face in the form of this 22-23 season, maybe that changes for next offseason, and you go into 23-24, and he's something closer to his rookie season. But that being said, like that's to me the most interesting question, is how deep do you go? Because
that's why they're more interesting, is because it's just like the Leafs are adding. It's
this,
one thing that's happening.
Right, but
the Raptors could have a scenario where all of a sudden he is a guy that is never he won't lose deals. That's why they held on to Lowry. Is he going to have the same mentality with Fred VanVleet, or is he just going to be like, hey, you know what? I got to take what I can get here and make sure that this doesn't become a contract offseason problem.
See, the difference between you and me, and the reason why I get a little bit heated in this conversation, is that I think this comes down to our separate sports psychology. And it's why I brought up the off court stuff, that you're so interested in the NBA, which I am as well. But it's the actual games. It's the thing that is tangible. It's the it's the meritocracy of sports.
Guess
it's seeing the result.
Yeah, Ben.
That is most interesting to me. And
I'm excited for that too. I'm so tired of watching this Raptors team this year. They are a snooze.
Yeah.
They are a painful watch.
Yeah,
they have zero identity.
How exciting are they going to be to watch them? And I guess it's better than trying to watch them win against a team that was supposed to be in rebuild and has found something this year in the Pacers. But
if they get a couple of young players shoot it in the arm, like, that's what's so fascinating about the Raptors. They could get a couple of good young guys, and they could get a couple of bunch of picks, and you could see how those pieces work with, like, Scotty Barnes potentially having more mobility. Like, who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that the far more interesting one is that if they trade OG Anunoby and they trade Fred, and I don't know if that's even... I'd rather they keep OG. I'm just saying, if it's a Donovan Mitchell type of trade, it's got to be in consideration, and especially given his contract. Like, who knows? If you're the Raptors and you're considering something like this, all of a sudden, watching a young team with a different set of players, with a bunch of different assets, and how they operate around Siakam, and then wondering about an offseason, they could pivot, and they could see improvement in Barnes in year three, to the point, or they could hit in that lottery where you could be coming back with like multiple assets, one, a top two pick in the draft, Pascal Siakam, the reigning rookie of the year. Like, no, I think that this is the perfect mesh of these two things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think that this is so fascinating. You could end up going from one of the worst products in basketball right now, which is the Toronto Raptors. It's true. I'm sorry. I watch a lot of the league. Yeah. There's very few teams that are more painful to watch right now than the Raptors. Like, it's
but only
true.
On offense and defense.
Yeah, only those two ways. And team chemistry. Yes. That's it. Other than that, the fans are amazing. Like, you know, that's good. You got great home court. They still win at home.
Uniforms are okay.
Yeah, they're fine.
Middle of the road.
Either way, you could come back. The possibility of what the Raptors could have next year is so unbelievably tantalizing. To think that there is an outside shot that you could end up with. Like, did you see the Scoot dunk yesterday?
No, I didn't see it.
You guys see it?
Yeah, Scoot Henderson is legit.
The dunk that he had last night in the G League, and it's a dunk, right? Like, it's not, but it's kind of like a home run where you go like, holy crap. Mm. It's an outrageous flush. Mm-hmm. And you start to dream on something like the reigning rookie of the year with Wembanyama or Scoot. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the highest upside. Pascal Siakam, an all-NBA type player. Potentially an OG, potentially a Gary Trent. And then, like Masai Ujiri at the helm. Multiple other picks, a couple of other young players. Like, you can go from this horrible product to potentially the envy of the league. See, that to me is just like, you cannot pass on that.
I'm going to give you some credit.
Why?
Because now you're taking the very optimistic viewpoint, which I appreciate, right? Yeah. Like, the very hopeful viewpoint. To me,
of course it can go south.
No, I'm just like, there's some wistfulness, like, in the idea that a guy that that a team that, like, not even a year ago had this incredible second half run, got into the postseason, looked like they were on the verge of being the first team in NBA history to come back from 3-0 against a team that had championship aspirations, and now with the next season's trade deadline, and I get it, like, you're taking the optimistic viewpoint, which I should. Dude. But to me, there's like some depression involved with that this is a team that I think we all got, I guess, fooled into believing.
Yeah, you're a negative Nancy.
Yeah, I guess we got fooled into believing that there was a future of that core. And
no, I was never fooled though, and you know that. And this is why I'm kind of there. I will admit, we talk about being right culture too much, and how it happens often in sports. Like, this Raptors team, I was saying in the offseason, should have been exploring Fred VanVleet trades, and people went, "You're insane." And I went, "I'm sorry, this is the way that I see where this team is at. They are not going to be able to merge these two timelines."
Maybe you had a head coach that wasn't playing him like 48 minutes a game. No, yeah, that he could be managed.
All right, we got to go. We got a long break anyway. But it's Austin's, in my ear hard. Like, we gotta run. But the coach, that's the other thing. The coach might not be around. And maybe if they do go younger, then they decide that he's not the type. Or maybe they think he is more the type with more control. I don't know. Either way, Raptors are, both are fascinating. Both are incredibly, incredibly intriguing and
there's
interesting.
No winner in our debate.
Well, no, it's completely subjective. Anyway, I'm actually pretty curious what people think about it. I'll probably put out a video of this or a tweet. Maybe it'll be just a board or something like that. So make sure that you weigh in. Let us know. And again, at JD Bunkus, at SN Ben.
No, Sportsnet.
Sportsnet Ben. Sorry.
You're the worst.
Sorry. At don't even follow Ben. Not worth it. It's bad accounts. Anyway, quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap this sucker up.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we got to be quick, so let's rapid fire some things that we missed. Let's go.
Pete? Oh, what did we miss?
Way to work it out, boys.
Yeah. Well, we did talk about Brian Daboll and the Giants earlier, but there was a story that came like from training camp about how Brian Daboll was purposely setting up Daniel Jones to fail and elevating Tyrod Taylor in practice to see how Jones would respond mentally. Mm. And apparently Jones passed with flying colors. One of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL this season. Danny Dimes. JD, would you ever do this to Joe or me?
We're going a little too far with the Danny Dimes thing of like one of the most electric quarterbacks in the NFL. Like, he's good. Like, he's just not a write-off, I think, is what we...
He's no longer tripping over his own feet. Yeah, like nothing but green space in front of him.
I just weigh that strength. Would I do that to you and Joe? Here's the thing. I think that it's when you're motivating people, you have to use the carrot and the stick. Like, I think that it's just too much, you know, hey, praise, praise, praise. Then you end up with... someone who is like a inflated sense of self. Mm-hmm. And then if it's just, you know, stick, 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 then you just have people terrified of, you know, everyone.
But that's not motivated. He's just like literally trying to find out if this guy will crumble. Like, will he be like, life's not fair. True. You're calling all the hard plays or, you know, the plays that won't work.
Yeah.
When I'm, my first team offense is on the field and Tyrod Taylor gets all the good plays.
Here's why I like it is because it worked and it's Brian Daboll. So it's kind of hard for me to quibble with it. In general, though, you know what? I think that it depends. This is Daniel Jones. Again, this is a season where you had to find out who he was. And so if you're trying to really find out who somebody is, then you stress test it, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a good strategy.
It's It's like The Right Stuff, if you've ever seen that movie, where they're in the room and like everything's falling apart and there's like nobody is telling you that there's steam like spraying out of the sky and like there's alarm bells going off and are you going to keep your cool?
But you would agree that if this was a rookie or a second-year player who had, like, if this was Zach Wilson.
Yeah, he'd be like, what the hell's going on here?
What are you doing? Like, why are you? Yeah, that's,
it would be confusing.
So, it's dependent on the person, but
Well, and it also seems like Zach Wilson's probably the guy that needs the carrot. Like, lots of carrots. Fill him full of carrots. Carrot cake.
Yeah. Zach Rabbit. Okay, next.
JD, you and I mentioned this before the show, and we wanted to bring it up with Ben. There was a story circulating a couple days ago, and I wanted to put it in here. In 1973, the U.S. Army tested putting explosives in Nerf footballs.
Oh, I saw
because
this.
It was they thought it was going to be better for the soldiers to throw.
Yes.
But it completely didn't work because the weight distribution was all off.
Honestly, though, this is a great, on the surface, I thought this is a perfect idea. Like, this is a great idea.
It makes sense.
Although, why would they use baseballs, though? Like, having more people throwing a baseball?
Grenades are shaped that way.
Yeah.
Because every American can throw a baseball.
But, they thought they could put more explosive, because it's a little more weight, into a football and then, just sling it, bro.
Well, I love how the picture on Twitter was like a literal Nerf. It like had Nerf written in. Stuffed explosives into a Nerf football.
It has the Nerf logo on it.
Yeah.
And they're like, really just sling it.
That looks like a CFL football, by the way.
It's Nerf or nothing. Dude, that is so good. But I also love picturing the military guy around the table, like, what we gotta do is we got two problems solved. And once we get more great American quarterbacks, and we throw more Nerf footballs into Nazi bunkers, we're gonna win this war.
Dude, how hard would it not be to like take like a 5-step drop, like actually?
Could you imagine?
Look off like a couple of Nazis, and then
I was gonna say too, like they're bringing in like Joe Montana into military, like he's teaching everybody how to throw spirals perfectly. Yeah. That's good. I think that's a pretty good one. All right, what's next?
Dana White, UFC, was in Cabo celebrating New Year's Eve, and he was caught on camera in a fight with his wife. They exchanged slaps. He was quoted a few years ago being like, you can never recover from hitting a woman, and now he's on TMZ apologizing for hitting his wife.
Yeah. Okay, so by now everybody's seen this thing. Dana White slapped his wife, and he's a guy who's been on record as, hey, you can't recover from this in the UFC. I actually thought, well, first of all, it's like, this is kind of strawmanning to be like, I don't think it's acceptable to hit a woman. Like, it's pretty much the easiest take that you can have. Like, I don't need to waste any time with that. What I actually genuinely kind of think was pathetic is Dana White, the way that he went on TMZ and he kind of issued a statement that was just very PR, where it was like, he kept hitting the same points over and over. He's like, my wife and I have known each other a long time. I'm like, who cares? Like, you know, it was like, so what? He's like, we've known each other since we were kids. I was like, what are you implying here? And he's like, but we have kids. And he kept going, and I don't care what anybody says about this. I'm like, okay, you're on TMZ, so clearly you care to a certain degree.
Yeah.
And I think the bigger issue right now is that ESPN and the rest of these partners have not spoken up about it. And
or
it's like,
UFC,
are you just going to let, are you just going to let Dana White get like be cool with this, like no suspension, no nothing? Anyway, it's kind of like now this guy is trying to promote his new thing, Slap League. So good luck with that amazing project and separating people thinking about Dana White from that. Anyway, awful look for him, awful look for the sport. Been basically this way for now the last couple of weeks. We got to run. Benny, thanks for the time. Subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, and we'll see you tomorrow.